Hello there, this is Crystal, and you're listening to the Crystal Archive podcast.
Crystal Archive Podcast, episode number 29. I am Mr. Crystal, and this was recorded on January 21st, 2012. This is the second live recording of the Crystal Archive Podcast. Today I'd like to introduce two guests. You won't be able to hear them, but because this is live, we have a chat room, and later we'll have audio, possibly, from them. We have The Hope and Foxtype 1973 in the chat room. And hopefully, we'll get more listeners as the podcast progresses. So, with that out of the way, with introductions done, I'm going to begin with the traditional old news. Things that have happened since the last podcast in relation to the Crystal Archive, Star Fox in general, and Nintendo news, and whatnot. So, first and foremost, the Saurian Translator. That was the last update since the Crystal Archive podcast, episode number 28. I determined, after looking at the Saurian Translator again, that it was broken and had been broken for some time. Not sure why it ever worked in the first place. There were some glaring errors. So I went in and I fixed that up, simplified it all, made it very nice, and also made several improvements to the translation system. I found a way to use regular expressions to do most of the translation. And if you know anything about programming, you'll know that regular expressions can be extremely fast and extremely greatly simplify the amount of work necessary to do any given thing with some text. So I was pretty excited about that got going. And it also got me thinking about the new features I can add in the future, which I'll be talking about later in the show. Next, I finished the fan art scripts, or at least most of them. The fan art scripts were a rewrite of the existing Perl scripts that would allow me to take huge lists of Crystal fan art URLs and pull them down into the information, such as the artist name, the link to the art itself, and the title. And also allowed me to put warnings and favorites, split them up into traditional and rendered categories. Now, I'd done this before, but the scripts were getting longer and more complicated and broke all the time because of their complexity, and they weren't very interactive. You had to really know your programming to actually use them. I wanted to solve this problem by switching to using JavaScript and HTML-based processing, and I did so. So I finished the scripts that allow you to do several things. Let me pull up the list here on my computer. Each web page describes a function that this does. So first off, I run something called Binify URLs, which takes all the URLs I've found via searching on DeviantArt or for Affinity or links that other people give me. And it splits it up into valid URLs, things that my scripts can go ahead and process without any problem, and splits out the invalid ones, which I'll have to do manually. I take those valid URLs and run them through a program called MassGetPageData, which takes the URLs and grabs the entire source code for every single page on there. That is then parsed for the artist name and the URL and the title and various other pieces of information, including, most importantly, the download link for the file itself. I then take that file download link. Oh, and by the way, this is these processing, these parsing, All I have to do is plug in a little script for each type of site. So there's a plug-in script for DeviantArt, there's a plug-in script for Fur Affinity, and if some other art website comes along that I want to automatically be able to process, I just plug in a new script that knows how to deal with that. So it's very modular, much easier to maintain, and if one thing breaks, not all the things will break. It'll just be one site at a time, which that's usually what breaks is DeviantArt will change how their source code works. Anyway, with the data stored in the new JSON format, which is much easier to parse and is automatically parsable by JavaScript, which means I don't have to worry about making my own format anymore. It's now completely compatible and very human readable. It's not difficult to read this new format I've made to store all the information. In fact, because I can add as many fields as I want, I can actually store all information about all fan art. So I can basically store the traditional and render fan art and questionable fan art, which I want to keep track of but never get put on the site because they don't meet some standard. They're not pornography or anything, but they're a little bit too mature, in my opinion, to be put on the Crystal Archive because the Crystal Archive is rated for PG-13. Or really PG, actually. So I have a folder called Questionable where I keep track of the things that are not just totally bad but are never going to get on my site. Anyways, so all that stuff can be put on one list, and then I can process that and pull out of that the individual lists, such as the traditional fan art or the rendered fan art, and make lists out of that. Anyway, you can put that list into the Mass Download Images program, which will go out and download all the images, put them in a folder on my computer because I'm running my computer as a server. And it also does an amazing thing of detecting how many bits or bytes are in the file, and how, if it's an image, how big it is in height and width in terms of pixels. That's going to be useful in the future when I write new scripts that try to detect duplicates. And it will be able to first sort things by height and width. And things that are exactly height and width, there's a pretty likely chance that they're the same, unless they're like a standard format, like the wallpaper size. Obviously, then height and width won't help you. But then I can simplify it down to just those things that are physically the same size, and then I can compare the individual pixels. And if all the individual pixels match up or are within a certain percentage of being the same colors, that means that there's a great chance that they are the same. So using that system, I should be able to detect duplicates even beyond my own ability to remember all the fan art and recognize that, oh yes, I've seen that before, because I do keep a copy of all the fan art I have ever posted on the Crystal Archive, whether it still exists or not online, for the purposes of defining and remembering which artists did what and what their alternate names are, but also because it's my own Crystal fan art collection. With that information available, I have all the images. It downloads all the images. Now, when it downloads all the images, it's not necessarily just the Crystal data. In fact, the data is unsorted. What it's downloading is all the images I have links for. So oftentimes I'll see an image and I think it's Crystal because of the thumbnail, but it's actually some fan character or something else I clicked on that happened to get into the list of URLs. Well, with the new program called Visual Modifier, I can, with keyboard shortcuts, which is the fancy thing, allows me to run through each piece that was downloaded in the list very, very quickly. I can go back and forth and look at each one. I can delete them from my list. I can assign warnings to them there. I can add faves. I can sort them into traditional and rendered. I can update the artist name and title if necessary. And all this stuff gets stored back into the JSON data, which I can then later use in other programs, such as Generate Table. Generate Table is what turns the JSON list into the tables that I actually post, the fan art lists and the new fan art lists that I post in posts, not on the fan art pages. So that's what I did. I took the finalized, marked up, After I added the warnings and split them off, I took those things, generated tables, and those generated tables are stored as these lists of fan art, which I have then posted. I posted this on December 20th, 2011. I posted a new set of traditional fan art and rendered fan art. First time I looked for new fan art in about a year. So there were over 1,000 fan arts. Yeah, much more than 1,000 new fan arts. So I had to do a lot of processing on that. But thankfully, with these new tools, the process only took a couple of days for a year's worth of fan art, versus it could have taken weeks to do it with the older tools. So that's what's really going to improve the quality and speed of doing the fan art in the future. So I'm really excited about that. Sorry for the long-winded explanation. I've got to still build some other tools to detect duplicates, and tools to merge new fan art into old fan art lists. But those should be, except, well, detecting duplicates is relatively difficult, but merging two pieces of data is pretty simple, actually. Let me check and see. For those of you listening, I'm just checking in on the chat, okay, because people are talking as I'm talking and I can't always see them. Oh, we have a new guest, the Talon76. Welcome. All right, let's continue on. The next post was on December 31st, 2011, where I welcomed all of you into the year 2012, which, as you all know, is going to be the end of all days. At least that's what some people think. I don't personally, but just putting it out there. I wanted to say that I got a new high-quality, professional-quality microphone. It's called a Blue Snowball. The company name is Blue, and the microphone is a Snowball. And for those of you listening, you should be hearing a much, much higher quality sound coming through. And you should be hearing less of the background noises and the noise from my computer fan, because the microphone's not actually located on my computer itself anymore. Lastly, someone from the Crystal Lovers Association, who goes by Cab49, mentioned that he managed to get Estelle Ellis, the original voice actress of Crystal in Star Fox Adventures, to do an interview where they were asking for questions, and anybody could go to the Crystal Lovers Association forum and post their potential questions and have them answered by her. I posted a few of my own, and I later found out that it was not going to be an audio interview. It was going to be an email interview, which is fine. But that, you know, when I first heard that they were going to do this interview, I was like, oh, great. I've wasted my opportunity to do the audio interview I've had planned for a long time, because I am in contact with Estelle Ellis. It's just been, I just keep getting busy and keep, you know, the job situation and moving. It keeps slipping my mind. I really got to do it at some point. Thankfully, it's an email interview, so I don't feel so bad about asking her to do the interview after she's done the interview, because it's not the same kind of thing. So I'm going to look into getting that done once and for all. I've still got all the questions that were submitted to me, you know, like 2 years ago when I first got in contact with her. And she's a really nice lady, so I'm sure she'll probably still be interested in doing the audio interview. I just got to get that all set up. Next, just a bit of Star Fox news. I found out that a company in Japan, with the approval of Nintendo, is going to be releasing for about 300 yen, which is a very, very small amount, if I remember correctly, in American dollars, miniature figurines of the various vehicles from Star Fox 64 3D and Steel Diver. That includes an R-Wing, a Landmaster, and a Blue Marine. And if I read it correctly, it's one of those little mini kits where you actually build the things yourself. I'm not sure how big they are, but from the description, it sounds like they're actually quite small, something like a couple of inches across for each one of them. Next, one of the big emails I've been getting for literally a year and a half or so is that the man who goes by Burmiken, on the Nexus, who released a Fallout 3 mod of Crystal, took it down, and proceeded to remove his entire existence from the internet. He removed all posts he's ever done, he deleted his old projects, and he shut down all of his accounts. And several people were, every couple of months, or even every couple of weeks, someone would email and say, "Hey, by the way, did you know this mod is not available?" Clearly, this mod was very popular, or at least people really wanted it, especially since it was no longer available. Well, I got in contact with several people, one of whom was who had worked with Bermesian, if I'm pronouncing that right, and his name was Beaky Helmet. He worked on some of the textures for the mod before it was taken down. And since he worked on it, I feel that he has some permission, some legitimacy to ownership of the mod, and he allowed me to post the mod on the Crystal Archive, which I have now done, although it took me a really long time. And basically, if Bermesian ever comes to me, emails me, and tells me, "Hey, I want you to take that down. I didn't really want it out there," then I'm going to have to take it down. But for now, I have official approval to post it. So I hope that satisfies those people who were looking for it. Also, while I was researching all that, I found out that for Fallout New Vegas, someone else had made a mod of Crystal. Someone who goes by Boseku. So that got posted. Now, I don't post that on the Crystal Archive because I don't have permission and I don't have a way of contacting that person. But I did post to where it has been posted on Foul Planet, and it doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. Shortly after that, I was surprised and delighted to hear from Gray Firefox, who told me that his final version of the Crystal Rig, version 1.4, was finished, and he's going to give it to me, and he had all kinds of assets to show off with that, including a fantastic 2.5-minute showcase of all the features of the model. And he did a fantastic job showing off the lip-syncing capabilities, the new hair, the eye and facial movement, the physically enabled clothing and new fur rendering engine for the tail and other parts of the body, improved hair, improved armor based on, if I remember correctly, Little Dragon's model. And he added also a couple of videos of the model moving around in a more dynamic fashion than in the other video about Crystal and the Firefly. So just an all-around fantastic work. People loved it, and I do too. It just looks fantastic, and I just hope that someone with a lot of talent and access to Maya 2009 will be able to take this and make for us some fantastically animated shorts, or maybe even some kind of live action comic or something, some form of a story or something. I look forward to that sort of thing. Next, I announced that I would be going to Further Confusion 2012, held in San Jose, California, from January 12th through the 16th, although I was only there for the weekend, 14th and 15th. I mentioned here and elsewhere, including Star Fox Online, where I recently made sure I updated myself on there, because I haven't been going to the forums in a long time, just been too busy, that if anyone was going to come by and chat with me, I knew that Foxtype, who's in the chat room now, or was, would be there, so I got to meet up with him, and also Ken Sing Sho, who is a personal friend of Ayano, the Crystal cosplayer from the last 2 years. I got to meet him as well. And unfortunately, though, Ayano herself could not be there. So that was kind of a disappointment. I didn't get to see that Crystal fursuit, but maybe next year. Maybe next year. This was really going to be my first con experience, and I'm going to talk about it a lot more in the new news section in just a bit. Next, I got something from I think it was Danny Fox who told me about this, but Danny Fox commissioned a small assault style crystal figurine from Daryl, I guess you pronounce it. Looks pretty good. Some people have commented that the eyes are too big, but otherwise it's a fantastically modeled clay looking, it's clay or plastic. But it's a fantastic crystal statue where she's just sitting there looking pretty. Of course, told everyone that there would be a new live podcast this Saturday, which is, of course, right now, episode 29. I made a quick note about the SOPA and PIPA, the two pieces of legislation that were going through the House and Senate in America that would effectively shut down most of the interesting internet. I've heard the analogy that in order to stop copyright infringement, let's say there's a corner store that has that sells music and CDs, audio CDs. And for whatever reason, the Motion Picture Association of America decides that they suspect that this store might possibly be selling some percentage of their goods illegally. They were illegally copied, violating copyright law. Now, there's all kinds of ways you can deal with this problem. You can go and talk to the store owner. You can go talk to the people who buy from the store. You could even do some kind of sting operation and check and see if, in fact, there are things being sold there that are illegal. Or you could go into the store and actually seize the illegal material and perhaps even sue the store owner. All these things actually make a little sense when you take into account copyright law. Not that I agree with copyright law as it's currently written. I think it has some good purposes, but ultimately has much more bad going for it than good. But that's an issue for another day. Regardless, what SOPA and PIPA would do is instead of doing all those things I mentioned, it would instead barricade people from getting anywhere near the store. And it would tell the phone company that they had to no longer acknowledge that this store existed. In fact, anything that acknowledged that the store existed would have to be censored, essentially. They would have to remove their number from the phone book. Anything listing local businesses, that would have to be stripped. And anyone attempting to get anywhere near the store may be arrested, even if they did nothing wrong. It's actually quite amazing that any law like this could have ever come out, except for the fact that it seems more and more these days that American politicians are all too happy to make laws for which they know nothing about. And in this case, they know nothing about the internet. It's quite clear from the language of the legislation and the potential for abuse. So, I'm happy to report that since then, SOPA and PIPA have been all but killed. A couple of them have, or one of them was completely killed. I don't remember which. The other was not killed, but they retracted support for it. They're going to take it back to the drawing board and basically start over and hopefully completely change it or eliminate it entirely. It's my personal opinion that America already has enough laws since it's not really physically possible to read them all anymore. There's just so many. But anyway, we'll continue on with the crystal-related news. But I thought that was pretty important because it could pinch it. Well, it could definitely shut down the Crystal Archive and Star Fox Online and the Crystal Lovers Association and DeviantArt and Fur Affinity and just about every other site related to Crystal and the furry fandom. So it's pretty important. All right. The next thing, besides this podcast, of course, is that I completely forgot about the Crystal Archive's 6th birthday. It is, in fact, 2012, January 8th would have been the 6th birthday, the 6th anniversary of being online, and I completely forgot. Normally I post about it and post about what has happened in the past year, but I was just so busy and with the plans for the further confusion, I just got completely sidetracked. So anyways, that's 6 years. Just a few more years, it'll be 10 years. I checked. I also checked today, and in September, I think it's September 23rd, 2012, will be the 10-year anniversary of Adventures, and therefore the 10-year anniversary of our experience with Crystal and Star Fox. So it's a pretty important year, I think. We'll have to do something special for that. And that takes care of all the news since the last podcast episode, number 28. So, without further ado, I'm going to jump right in to the new news. All right. So, for the past 2 weeks or so, I've been working really, really hard on a couple of new features for the Saurian Translator. They were... I changed the text type so that it's what's called monospace. What monospace means is, no, whether you're typing an M or a period or the letter I or the letter T or a zero, they're all the same width. All the characters are the same width. What that allows you to do is keep track of where things are absolutely. You don't have to know how wide each character is. You just have to know how many characters there are, which is very useful in several uses, several cases, including this one, because the other feature I added, which was I synced the scroll bars. So now, when you scroll down on one field, the English field, for example, it will scroll down the exact same amount in the Saurian field. So you'll always be looking at the same thing. That actually works really well. And in order to do that, I had to have the monospace font so that the text would line up, because otherwise there would potentially be words in Saurian that would be way longer than words in English. You would think it might balance out, except for the fact that the English language does not use words in a uniform way, or letters in a uniform way. There are far more T's and E's and S's in English than there are Q's and X's and Z's. So I had to use the monospace. Now that works fine, and I'll be releasing that soon. What doesn't work fine, what I've been spending the most amount of time on and almost got working, is a feature I'm very proud of, but unfortunately is fundamentally limited in a certain way. And that is that I wanted to be able for you to type normally. You can type in the field just as you normally would, but when you hover over a given word, it both highlights that word and the corresponding word in Saurian. And I actually got this working. It took a lot of work, because it turns out you can't highlight things in text areas, which is what I was using, and you can't highlight you can't highlight things in text areas. That's the fundamental limitations. If it's in a text area, it's actually text. You can't put HTML in there, which would allow me to highlight things. So what I had to use is something called Content Editable, which allows me to turn any area, such as a table, or in my case, just a division, an area, into something that you can put a cursor in and start typing. And that worked okay. Except for every time you take stuff out of it, it replaces the cursor and puts it at the beginning of the line. Well, that's not going to work, because as soon as you type the first character, it's going to go to the beginning of the line, and you'll be typing all your text backwards. Didn't want that to happen. So I had to use a very complicated system to figure out where your selection was, keep track of it, and do all that. When I finally got that done, I had the problem of, well, how do I pull out individual words? I had to write a parser, but that pulled out the individual words, modified them, and put them back exactly as they were. This was a huge task, and I eventually did get it working in Google Chrome. It turns out one of the features I have to have, I just have to have it, at least to my knowledge, there's no other way to do this, is called Intertext. It allows me to get just the text of what's inside this content editable div, but it has the one advantage of it keeps track of where your spaces and new lines are, where you actually push the enter key. What Firefox has is called text content. It does not keep track of where the new lines are. I tried and I tried and I tried to emulate it. I really did. I spent all night on it, last night, and for the past few days, that's pretty much been all I've been trying to do, is emulate the functionality of InnerText to work in Firefox. And I just can't make it do it. It's just, it's beyond me right now. There may be a way to do it, but it appears that no one on the entire internet has tried to do what I'm trying to do. And so, barring making my own text editor from scratch, it's just not going to happen anytime soon. So, I unfortunately am going to have to abandon that idea, or make it work, but only in the browsers that support it, which right now look like only Chrome, Safari, Internet Explorer, oddly enough, should work perfectly. And I'm told that even though Opera supports inner text, it supports it the way Firefox supports text content. So I don't think it will work in Opera. Basically, it'll work in everything but Firefox, and most people don't care about Opera. So maybe I'll do some kind of, if it detects that you're using a browser that can use it, then it'll use that. Otherwise, it will switch back to text areas and you won't have that function. I think that's the best solution. But I'm just really disappointed that I couldn't get it working the way I wanted, with basically no restrictions and it work everywhere. So I'm kind of disappointed about that. But in other news, someone named Justin contacted me. I don't know if I talked about this on the last podcast. I don't think I did. But Justin emailed me about the Saurian translator, and he said he was interested in the pronunciation of Saurian. In particular, he had figured out a way to make a simplified Saurian pronunciation guide. He calls it Common Saurian, I think, in which it's not technically, you know, perfectly accurate to the way that they pronounce it in the game, which is what I'm going to try and do when I do my pronunciation. But it should be simplified, simpler for you to remember the rules and pronounce words on the fly. I plan to implement his Common Saurian methodology when I implement my also my own pronunciation system too. And related to that, I also noticed during the process of checking the pronunciation and seeing how it works that the crystal, because Estelle Ellis has a kind of a French, she speaks in French type voice, that she actually pronounces certain words and certain letters differently than the other voice actors. I haven't gotten all the rules down, but it's clear that she definitely pronounces certain things differently. So what I'm planning to do is provide several pronunciation guides. One will be this Common Saurian, another one will be the traditional Saurian, and then there will be Crystal Saurian, which, so far as I can tell, mostly involves rolling your R's. Instead of saying, what's a good example of rolling your R's? Anybody in the chat room, you want to help me out? What's a good example of that? Rolling your R's. So you would say Rotundra, which is a place, if I remember correctly. But if you roll your R, you'd say Rotundra. Rotundra. Crystal does that more often. Let's see. And also, because of all the fantastic advancements in HTML5 technology, first off, I can do one thing I just thought of just now, actually, is I can put a little microphone on the text area where you type you would normally type your English, and tell it to, when you click it, it will record from your microphone, and you will just basically be able to speak some words, and then I can detect that and translate that directly into Saurian. You won't have to type anything at all. I can add that feature in like 10 or 15 minutes, so I think I'll do that. Also, there is a possibility, although it's not really widely available yet, that I will be able to make the site able to pronounce to you what the Saurian should sound like. It will take the text input and some rules I give it and output sounds to your speakers. That's really, really new technology, so I'm not sure how well that'll work. But it's something to look forward to. You know, that was one of the things that I said, like, it would be fantastic if someday I could make the Saurian translator actually know how to speak Saurian to you. And it looks like it may not actually be that far off. So, kind of excited about that. All right. Enough about the Saurian translator for now. Let's go on to my experience with Further Confusion 2012. So as I said, I was going to go to Further Confusion 2012 in San Jose, California, which I did. It was like a, it's like a 2-hour drive away. So I did that. I drove there on early Saturday morning, and I got there in time to see a couple of panels and get some lunch. I met up with Foxtype, who's in the chat room now, and basically was freaking out, just kind of freaking out a little bit because I it was so new and there was so much going on. I had gone to Rainforest for 3 hours back in 2008, if I remember correctly, and that was truly a small convention. There were something like 5 times the people at Further Confusion that there were at the Rainforest 2008. I've heard since that Rainforest has become a huge show unto itself, but at the time it was relatively new and relatively small. So that's really. That I was just kind of freaking out, and I actually felt a little sick to my stomach because it was just so much new things at once. But thankfully, I was already kind of used to people walking around in giant furry suits, which I guess being in the furry fandom has already desensitized me a little bit to it. But even then, like seeing it in real life does take some getting used to. I remember as a young child, I absolutely hated to be anywhere near mascots, furry or not. Those giant heads kind of freaked me out. And also, I didn't like to be in the public light very much. So that meant that if I was anywhere near them, they were going to come up to me and, I don't know, make everyone look at me because they were trying to look at that mascot. So I didn't want anything to do with them. But at FurryCon, like, that's kind of like, oh, you know, you're wearing a suit. Okay. You haven't told me why that's different yet, because there's so many people in suits. There was something like 200 people in suits during the parade, which might have been about the most suits at any given time. Although, I watched the whole parade and, with Foxtype there, he was recording with his, HD camera. Oh, I think it's HD, but anyway, it's, he's recording with that, and I was standing next to him, and we saw something like 200 fursuits, and I thought that was all of them, but it turns out, like, the next day, like, at night, there's, like, a lot of people came out, but there were something like 20 or 30 fursuits that just weren't there before, so, and they weren't in the parade at all, so there were a huge number of people in suits, and that was kind of cool, but really, the thing that freaked me out the most was not really so much a freaky thing as the fact that I didn't really know anybody. I knew Foxtype, and he's a cool guy. You know, we hung out, and we ate lunch and dinner together on most days, the 2 days I was there. But other than that, I didn't really know anybody personally. And not knowing anybody, you know, not going to a con with several friends you know can be kind of a lonely experience. I was all, at the end of the day on... I mean, I went to several panels on Saturday, and there were some good ones. And the furry writing panel was pretty good, and I learned a lot there. And I got to see most of the show, like the dealer's room where all of the artists set up and try and sell their art and commissions, and that was cool. But I didn't really know anybody other than Foxtype. And so I felt really lonely at the end of the day. I was like, maybe I shouldn't. I mean, it's cool, furry is cool online, but maybe I shouldn't spend the time to come out to these cons because it seems like I don't know anybody, you know? Oh, and also in the dealer's room, I got to meet Ken Singsho, who's a personal friend of Ayano. And he was wearing a Rinnamon shirt, which kind of threw me off. Thought that was kind of cool. And I gave him his Pinkie Pie ornament, just like I have, which I showed on the last podcast. I showed him that. I gave it him because he's from Japan. He didn't have access to it, and I said I'd buy it for him, and then you know get it to him on the at the con because I knew he was coming. And I basically traded him the $5 and the Pinkie Pie ornament for his three comic books, which are another thing I like. His comics are about cybernetic anthros. Kind of a humorous, like, cartoonish feel, but it's the cyberfurs nevertheless. Those are another of my favorites. So, anyway, I was feeling lonely, didn't know anybody. I went to bed early on Saturday night, and then I got up, and that day was far more interesting. I got to see several panels. Almost all of them were far more interesting than the panels the first day. I went to a panel on the biblical anthropomorphism, so all the examples of in the Bible of animals talking or having animal characteristics, or people being described in animal terms. I also went to an advanced fursuit construction panel, where they showed off several things, some of which I knew, but because I'm interested in making a fursuit that's not actually furry, I was kind of interested in this talk because what I want to make is a cyber fursuit, which means there won't really be any fur. It will look like an animal, but it'll be all made of hard parts. You can actually think of it more as armor than a suit, than a fursuit. Think of it as like furry armor. That's what I'm going for, or what I'm interested in doing. But anyway, they showed several things. One of them was called Wonder Film or Wonder Flex or something like that. It's Wonder Something. And it's this amazing material that's like plastic that's impregnated with metal beams that are really tiny. And what you can do with it is you can actually heat it up. And then when it's heated, you can shape it in any shape you want. I mean, you can really like bend it into face masks or circles, or basically you can make any shape out of it when it's just a little bit hot. And when it cools, it retains that shape, but it's still very, very sturdy. Like, you could take it and you could just squeeze it in your hand, and you just really have to work at it to break it, but it's still flexible. It retains its shape very, very well when it's heated. And what's more, you can take this stuff and you can form it into whatever shape you want and then put another layer of it on top of it. And when both of those dry, it becomes really, really rigid and tough. And if you use three layers, I'm told that basically you can't bend it at all. It's like trying to bend glass or something. It's just like completely solid. And I think that material is really the kind of thing I'm looking for building the hard parts of the armor suit. That, and I've also investigated some stuff they didn't talk about, which is, I'm sure you've all heard of it, carbon fiber. Which it turns out is actually not that hard to apply. It comes in sheets like a fabric, almost. You can cut it with scissors, but it's when you lay it down and apply various kinds of chemical glue to it, and let it set, that it becomes really hard. And in some cases, depending on how it's constructed, I think it can repel a bullet. So I'm thinking of something like that Wonder Film stuff and covering the individual pieces with carbon fiber, which will make it really tough. And then from there, I can paint it basically with auto paint, and it'll look really shiny or however I want. So that's one of my plans. But anyway, I learned a lot of things there at that panel. That was cool. There was also a Pokemon panel where I got to... It was kind of bad because they set it up, the panel, in the same room as everybody else was playing card games, which was, I think, the intent. The problem was when the Pokemon panel started, people didn't stop playing their game, so we basically couldn't hear each other. That was kind of a pain. We talked about our favorite Pokemon for a bit. And then the guy I was sitting next to, I happened to mention that, yes, in fact, I am a video game programmer. And he turned to me and said, "Oh, you are? I work in the video game industry too." And so we got up and we went and chatted about that. So I met him. He's a cool guy. He did some testing on video games for Microsoft. And actually attended DigiPen too, although a couple years before I did. That was one unfortunate thing about the con. It turns out, and I didn't know this until I basically was already there, that on Friday night, which I wasn't able to attend, they had a social mixer for video game industry people. That would have been like the perfect thing for me, because I would have been in my element talking to other video game programmers and artists and designers. I'm really sad I missed out on that. I'll have to pay more attention next year and get in on that. And finally, most importantly, I think my favorite panel of them all was I went to the My Little Pony panel, and it was fantastic. It was fantastic. They showed us all kinds of pony music videos. I got to meet several of the famous people in the pony fandom, including someone I just recently had heard about, the most manliest brony in the world, who's like a motorcycle repair guy for Harley Davidson, and he has like this fantastic mustache that goes like across and then down the sides of his mouth, you know. And he got famous because he sang the Art of the Dress song that Rarity sings in the show, for YouTube, and then also proceeded to make a video entitled The Manliest Brony in the World, which is a parody of The Most Interesting Man in the World ads. So he was there, and I recognized him, and they had him go up on and talk about his favorite ponies and take questions from the audience, along with three other famous people. Mike the Microphone, who's famous for several ponies-related songs. There was one guy from one of the more popular pony podcasts. There was one other guy. I can't remember what he does. And then the panel host himself, who I think hosted some pony-related thing at the My Little Pony conventions in New York City. The Brony Cons, they're called. So there was we got to watch the new episode from that Saturday morning. We got to see that, which is the first time I was seeing it, so that was cool. I got to laugh and awe with the rest of the crowd, and I'll get to see lots of really clever pony music videos, or PMVs, with the other pony fans. And by the way, this panel, unlike all the other panels, like, this was standing room only. I got there like 15 minutes early with Fox Type, and we were like at the front. It was like, oh, there's like 15 people here. And then 5 minutes before, like 150 people show up, and people are like in the back, standing room only. So it was great. We also did sing along with the songs on the show, which I know most all of them, so I sung those pretty well. And people on stage were singing them because, you know, several of them were famous for their singing capacity. And then they closed the thing off with an auction, a live auction for a Pinkie Pie painting that was done for charity. And they really souped up like the bids for that. And when that was done, someone held up a skateboard that was painted with derpy hooves. And I actually bid on that one. I got into a short but sweet bidding war with the guy like right behind me. And the highest I would go was $55, and the guy behind me bid $60, and I just cut it off. And so he got the skateboard for $60. But I was not too upset about that, because it turns out that the person who made the skateboard is actually one of my favorite artists, who I didn't even know was there. His name is The Burning Donut, and I don't know if any of you remember him, but he is one of the oldest crystal artists, if I remember correctly. He has a very distinct, simple style I like. He uses very large, unaliased brushes in his artwork. It's very distinct. And and many of his crystal and non-crystal works are in my personal favorites on DeviantArt. So I got to meet him, you know, talking to him about the skateboard, and I told him, hey, you know, thanks for doing the crystal fan art. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, I'm Mr. Crystal. I made the Crystal Archive. And he's like, oh, yeah, I've been to that site a few times. You know, I've been thinking about making some new crystal fan art soon here. And I told him, that's fantastic, because several times, various artists in the dealer room and various other people I met in the halls and on the elevator, I had mentioned the fact that my name is Mr. Crystal. And they would give me blank stares, you know, like, or hi, you know. And I said, I made the Crystal Archive. And to my great disappointment, they also made blank stares at that. It turns out that most of the people who go to cons, it seems, have never heard of the Crystal Archive, which greatly disappoints me. Because I was told, and I'm sure all of you have heard, that everyone's furry for Crystal. So surely they've known, or at least, you know about the site. But such is life. But I was happy because he, at the very end of the show, like right before I was going to go home, drive home on a Sunday night, he acknowledged it. He knew what it was, and he knew of me, and so that was really cool. And also, I found out that he's actively seeking commissions from people, and his prices are extremely reasonable. And I plan to commission him as soon as he gets back. He's got some weird like travel issues. He's still trying to get back or something. But as soon as he gets back, and I figure out what to commission, I'm going to commission at least two commissions of Crystal. So I just need to get in contact with him and figure out what exactly I need, because I'm not even thinking about this. I see so much art all the time. Like, I've got to think, well, what haven't I seen? What do I want to see? You know? Don't usually think in those terms. So probably something in some kind of action pose, because I always like Crystal to be in the middle of a fight, you know, showing off that, yes, she can indeed handle herself. So that was my experience with the further confusion. Lots of adventures there. And overall, you know, I said I got really lonely at the end of day one, but by the end of day two, I was feeling fantastic. Everything worked out great. So I think it was definitely worth it to go. And I only wish that more of you and more people who know and enjoy Crystal like I do could have been there. Maybe next year when Ayano can come, then we'll have the truly great experience that I was hoping for out of this one. So I'll hold out hopes for that. Oh, and by the way, if you are interested in commissioning the Burning Donut, I encourage you to look at his art, because he is right now actively seeking people to commission him, and he needs the money. He's trying to pay rent, and he's in need. And so if you could all look at his art and if you enjoy it, commission him. His commissions are fantastically well priced. Actually, I think he's undervaluing them myself. That's why I said, and I told him to his face, I said, I need at least two commissions from you, you know, because the price was just so good. So if you have some spare change and want to help somebody out, please commission the Burning Donut. And by the way, he has a different name on DeviantArt. On Fur Affinity, he's the Burning Donut. On DeviantArt, I think it's called Slyler Car, I think. Ah, here he goes. Yes, Slicer Car. Slycercar. That is his DeviantArt name. But thankfully, I looked this up, because I'm looking at my first page of my favorites, and there's a fan art I want to mention. It's actually quite old, but I want to mention this. If you know about Crystal fan art, you know about Blackberry. Blackberry, other than the 3D renderer Crystal fan art artists, Blackberry, who's originally from Sweden, and she's currently living in France, she has made the most Crystal fan arts of any other person. Hundreds. Maybe as many as 200 Crystal fan arts. Lots and lots. And she does a really good job. Her art style is fantastic, detailed, and cute. Well, back in, and I'm looking at this fan art, October 12th, 2011, so a little while ago, she made an image of that girl, that foxy lady who's in the poster who's in the poster on the Great Fox in Star Fox Adventures. And she took what little you can see of the poster, and we've gotten the full size, like, we've gotten the full size image, as big as we can get it, and it's still kind of small. And she took all those details, and she made a very nice, another, like, calendar-style, photograph-style portrait of the character. And it looks absolutely fantastic. She calls it Fox Girl from Star Fox Adventures. And by the way, for those of you who don't remember or don't know about the overall history of the Crystal Archive, one of the very first things I did, one of the things that encouraged me to make the Crystal Archive in the first place, was that I was interested in figuring out who this character was and figuring out the actual image, like figuring out what this mystery was, because it was kind of like a little Easter egg. And that led to us taking the source code and looking through it, which led to us finding the unused audio from Crystal and all the story points that we'd never seen before in the actual game. And that information encouraged me to think, you know what, I have all this information about Crystal that no one else has. I should make a site about that. That was one of the several reasons I made the Crystal Archive. So it's both fantastic that we finally have the full resolution image, and now I wanted to just give a shout out to Blackberry, who goes by Black By on DeviantArt, that she made this portrait of the character, and you should check it out. It's really good. Okay, let me see. So the one thing I did not mention about what we did at the at Further Confusion was Foxtype finished up this. And I'm showing it to the camera now. It is a DVD. It is all of the remaining footage from Ayano, the Crystal Fursuiter from Further Confusion 2010 and 11. And he's got the HD, you know, full quality video of all of her interactions with the show floor and talking to people and walking through the parade. And so now that I have this disc, we're basically done. You remember from a year ago we were trying to get this out, and he made another film called Best Friends Forever, I think. And Best Friends Forever, and that was like just some of the more touching moments with Crystal, Ayano Crystal on the at the con. And this constitutes the rest of the footage. And so the video is on here. I'll be taking it and I'll be putting it on the YouTube account. And, I'll get to that in a minute. But yes, I'll be putting this on YouTube, so you'll be able to see all of Ayano Crystal in her full quality glory. And I also have another copy here, which the fantastic Foxtype was kind enough to send with me. This extra disc is for Lucas, who, as you may remember from previous podcasts, is suffering terribly from the results of chemotherapy on his brain. I haven't heard much from him in the last few months, but I'm sure he'll enjoy this disc, and so I'll be mailing that out to him as soon as I can get the address from his father. And hopefully it will spark some good memories, because right now he's having difficulty remembering things still. Oh, and also, Foxtype was kind enough to send a copy of this disc. One for Ken Singsho, who helped a lot with getting us in touch with Ayano in the first place. And one for Ayano herself, so she can see, you know, what she looked like as she walked around the show. Excuse me. Oh, and Foxtype says that there is one more video to make, which is not on the DVD. It's going to be the video that features her staff that he animates with the glowing effects just like in the game. Maybe even having her shooting off a few rounds of energy blasts, something like that. So we'll look forward to that. So I've got some other news that's not all personal. Don't worry. This is some actual new Crystal news here. Someone named Kitty Love emailed me and said that she had just begun working with Hacking Brawl. And she did the very simple task, according to her, of replacing Zero Suit Samus's model with the Crystal Trophy model. And it is working, and it actually looks pretty good. I mean, it's just the model, right? So it's going to be lower resolution than the regular character. But apparently, you can play as Zero Suit Samus looking like Crystal, and it's all wired up so she moves her arms and all that. And of course, but instead of a staff or something, she has whip or whatever. But looks pretty good. And unlike other Brawl mods right now, this one is available, like for download, that you can try it out. I don't know anything about how you hack Brawl, but apparently it's pretty simple to get custom characters in there. I'm told that it involves simply specialized save data on your little card, the little card. Like, you don't even have to hack your system. SD cards. You have to put it on the SD card. So I'll be posting up that pretty soon. Also, as I said before, I need to get back into contact with Estelle Ellis and finally do that interview, that audio interview with her. It's just going to be a matter of arranging the time and finding something that's good for her schedule. She's still in France or England right now, so it's going to be difficult to arrange the time zones. But other than that, I look forward to it. And related is, of course, the Estelle Ellis interview, the one that was done by the person at the KLA. That has been completed. The questions I asked and other people have asked have received responses, and the responses have been posted to the Crystal Archive and elsewhere. I, in fact, found this out this morning and have not had time to go through all the details that she said. So no doubt there will be lots to report on the Crystal Archive later today about that particular thing. But I apologize, I haven't read through it. I think I read through one of my questions, the question about what she thought about speaking in Saurian, but I'm going to leave that for later because I don't want to ruin the rest of the interview for you. And other than that, I want to say that I'm still making small improvements to the site as I continue to work on version 4 of the Crystal Archive. Version 4 is going to be different look, simpler navigation, faster navigation, more intelligent layout of the pages. And I'm doing whatever I can to reduce the amount of work I have to do. That includes the new fan art scripts. Now these fan art scripts are so simple that anyone can use them or help me use them in the future, which means there's the possibility of getting permanent staff who can help me with the fan art. But not just the fan art. There are other things I can do to improve and simplify the way that other things are posted, such as fan art, fan films. There's also I've discovered a new way to deal with image galleries and a new way to do video. So first of all, image galleries. I now can just upload the images and I don't have to worry about where they are, how big they are. I don't have to make the thumbnails. WordPress does that all for me, and I just enter a gallery tag, and that generates the gallery for me. And also, I figured out how to do ratio-based video sizing, which simply means that when I post a video, it's going to be as wide as the page is, regardless of... it's going to be as wide as the page is, no matter how wide the page is. And therefore, but it also keeps track of how tall it should be. So what you end up with is a video that has the correct aspect ratio, YouTube videos in particular, that will be 16:9, but they will be, depending on what page they're in, will determine how big they are. And basically that means I never again have to worry about how big the video should be, which will greatly simplify the process of inserting the video into the page or a post or whatever. Now, to test those things out, you remember I got the gray Firefox's new version 1.4 model. What I didn't say was that I changed the page, not the post, but the page itself for the long-term storage of that rig. I modified the page to be as modern as possible. So it shows the new gallery feature, the new video feature, and of course has all the downloads. And I think if you look at that page, the page for the rig, you'll get a small glimpse of the type of new layout that I'll be using for the next version of the Crystal Archive, version 4. Still not quite ready to show you what the actual front page will look like, but it's coming along well. It's just a matter of having time. And as I said, I've been spending the last 2 weeks or so working on the Sarian translator, so I haven't had time to work on the further confusion that took some time too. But other than that, I should have more time now to work on the new Crystal Archive version 4. And lastly, I think last time I talked about some super secret project that was furry related, not crystal related, that would be like a year and a half away. It's still a year and a half away. I haven't had much time to work on it, but I did do something on it, and it's looking fantastic. So, you know, be on the lookout for that. By the way, this thing, I don't know if I mentioned it before, this secret, I'm planning to release it under my real name, not the Mr. Crystal name. Or maybe I'll use some other alias that's not either one. But regardless of what it is, I will let you know what it is when that time comes. So that's all the new news I have for now. I haven't had much time to go through the mail since last time, and most of the posts were not things that I could, or most of the emails were not things that I could actually use as podcast questions, save one. So I do have one question, and then I'm going to go on to, we're going to take live questions from those in the chat room, which is now three people. So this is the first question, and I haven't even sent an email back to this person yet because I just got it this morning. I just got this question this morning. It says, my name is Ellie, and this is going to sound completely random, but is there anything you can tell me about Dinosaur Planet? I have been searching for the past few days for a ROM, and I know it's very unlikely that I'll ever be able to find one, but I was wondering if you could tell me if you know anything about Dinosaur Planet. Well, Ellie, unfortunately, Dinosaur Planet was at a stage where, even though it was mostly complete, no one ever sent copies to be reviewed by the media. It was shut down before that. So, just because the Star Fox 2 ROM that was leaked, and other ROMs that are leaked, are often leaked by people who get their hands on it early, or members of the press. And in those few games that get leaks early, but are never actually released, it's almost always the press. And that's what happened with Star Fox 2. Some member of the press released the game ROM to the internet. However, Dinosaur Planet, for whatever reason, it does not appear was ever sent to any member of the press. It was playable at E3 and Space World at the time, but it was never sent to anyone in the press. So no one really would have ever had the opportunity to leak it. It still no doubt exists in Rare servers somewhere. The copy is probably there, but I don't think we'll ever truly see it because of the various conflict of interest between ownership by Microsoft and Nintendo and all that other stuff related to Rare. We'll probably never ever see it again. And no, as far as I know, there is no ROM and probably never will be. So I apologize for that. Thankfully, we know a lot about we know a pretty fair amount about a game that never really came out because we have the source code of the game it became. So we know some of the details about the story, and we had lots of images, videos, and discussions about the game before it was canceled, or before it was changed into Star Fox Adventures. So, unfortunately, no, there's no way to get the ROM, there's no way to play it that we know of. Now, it occurs to me that the 10-year anniversary of Star Fox Adventures is coming up soon. And I think it might be a good idea to contact Rare specifically as the Crystal Archive in the spirit of preserving gaming history to ask, at the very least, if they could do some kind of an interview or a series of videos where they could talk about the game, the development process, what they were going to do with it, their hopes and dreams with it, and how the transition occurred. They might actually be pretty game for that, because it is one of their bigger games in the past 10 years. So maybe for the 10th anniversary, I'll try and set something up. So that's my answer to you, Ellie. And with that, I'm going to look through the chat logs here from the podcast, and I'm going to see if any of you in the chat room, we have Adam, Foxtype, and The Hope. If any of you have some questions, now's the time to ask. Or if you have any comments you want to make for the show, let me know. All right, here's a question from Adam. So he asks, he looked at the fan games section of the Crystal Archive, and he couldn't help but wonder why I thought that many of the so many of these Star Fox fan games are being made. Well, I think the answer is simple. Star Fox, like all Nintendo properties that make any amount of headway in the popular culture, it is popular because it's so high quality. Not all the games have had the kind of quality we've come to expect from the truly magnificent outings of Star Fox 64, but the potential is there, and everybody knows the potential is there. In fact, Star Fox may be the most popular non-realistic flying game out there, at least in terms of number of fans, maybe not in number of total sales. Because it's a nice quirky story with very solid mechanics and just fun gameplay. And I think that really strikes a chord with other people who like to make games, and with people who are creative, people who want to make games themselves, they often look to things they already like. I can't tell you how many people say, I want to make a game, and to make my game, I want it to be like X, but with features of Y. You know, some set of games which were heavily influenced on them. It is very rare for someone to say, I want to make a game, and it doesn't have a basis in anything else. I just, the idea came to me. Sometimes it happens, and it happens a lot more when you're talking about people who've made several games in the past, such as myself. People who've actually studied game design, we try and look for these mechanics that have never been used before, or never used in a certain way. But most of the people who want to make a game are amateurs. Nothing wrong with that. But they start off with what they know. What games do they like? And what games do they think they could work with? Or what kind of characters do they want to work with? And Star Fox is an easy target, because it's a relatively simple story. It has plenty of holes that you can insert things into, as it were. Plenty of plot holes, I should say. So you could easily insert a story without affecting the entire rest of the series. Also, the mechanics themselves are relatively simple. I don't know if I've said this before, but for a previous job, I had to teach. I taught some students, high school level students, how to program games using the Unity game engine, which is a very simple but effective game engine. It allows basically artists and content people who don't actually really know how to program make a game from scratch. They will have to learn some programming, but you can actually make a fair amount of a game without any programming at all, because of how modular it is and stuff like that. But anyways, I had the task of making a class for students, and the theme of this camp was technology and aviation. And so they wanted me, as a game programmer, to show them how to make a game, and I had to show them how to make an aviation game. I started out with a physics-style flight game, which tried to emulate the way airflow really moves over the wings. And, you know, you had to turn sideways and pull up to turn rather than just turning like you do in Star Fox. And I did that, and I got it pretty much working. It was a nightmare to physics is a nightmare to program. But I got it pretty much working, and when I did, it wasn't very fun. It was kind of boring, lame. I mean, nothing against people who like flight simulators. That's often what they want, is they want the realism. And that realism often means slow, bulky, uninteresting, and hard to control. Star Fox, on the other hand, is fast, easy to control, and it's very easy to say, I want to go to this section, I want to go to this place, and you can make your R-Wing do that with very little effort. So I reprogrammed the game to work with Star Fox-style physics. And what's remarkable is that Star Fox-style flight physics is incredibly simple. It's literally like three lines of code where you take information from the previous frame and plug it into the current frame. You combine the information about how far you're turning one way, and you combine that with how much to rotate the aircraft, plus the forward momentum from the previous frame. And that generates not only a plane that can fly like an R-Wing, but also it corrects itself. So if you let go of the controls, it automatically stabilizes and levels out. So in a matter of a day and a half, I redesigned a physics-based flight simulator to basically Star Fox in all range mode. And it was fantastic. And people loved it, and people could play it without really learning, you know, how to do the flight very easily. I mean, the point was to learn about aviation, but we wanted to have fun too. And so I think that the physical model also may have something to do with it. A flight game is simple conceptually, as is a first-person shooter, which may be why you see lots of first-person shooter Star Fox fan games. Okay, any other questions? I looked up at the top here. There was one question by someone who's left who said, what are my plans to go, what are my plans for the, Fox Type says that the film that's already up of Ayano at Further Confusion 2011 was called Friends Forever. So, just correcting that there. One of the persons who left, I think it was Talon, said that he's asking what I plan to do with the future of the site, which I've kind of answered. I want to do that. I want to make it easier for other people to help me. There's another thing I want to do. I want to improve the design of the site in terms of the content. The design of the site in terms of the layout is fine. It looks nice, right? But the content itself is pretty boring. It's just paragraphs and list items and tables, and those are important things. But I think I can improve by using more image-based content. So, for example, one of the things I want to do is take the cosplay section. And for every person who's cosplayed as Crystal, I want to take and have a large photo of that person in the suit. Some image that really showcases this is what the suit looks like. And then this large image will be covered up slightly, you know, on the bottom part, by text that will describe in a grid fashion the name of the person, the name of the suit, or where it was worn first, how many times it's worn, its type, so whether it's a fursuit or a Zentai based suit or body paint, as the case may be, and just basically the stats of the suit overlaid on an image. I think that'll look fantastic. So that's another thing I want to do. I want to improve the quality of the content by allowing us to use more images quicker and easier. So, without any further questions, I think we're about wrapped up here for episode number 29. Looking at the time, this show has lasted approximately 1 hour and 20 minutes. I hope you've all enjoyed. One last chance for any questions from the chat room before we shut down. All right, that's all the questions we have. Hopefully next time we will get some more than 3 or 4 people in the chat room at any given time. And we'll have a more active discussion. And we also kind of figured out how audio worked with this tiny chat system. So in the future, maybe with some new software, I can figure out how to get guest hosts on here with no problem at all. We can get audio questions from the audience in real time. We'll also have to try and figure out better times when more people will be available. So until next time, as always, send your questions, comments, news stories, praises, and threats to MrCrystal@gmail.com. This has been the Crystal Archive Podcast, episode number 29, recorded on January 21st, 2012. I hope you have all enjoyed, and we'll see you next time. Later.